in chamber meditation. Om Sahana Vavatu Sahanao Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavati Tamastuma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Kunchan chapter 1 verses 31 to 35. Page 41.
Nimittani cha pashyami, nimittani cha pashyami, viparitani keshava, viparitani keshava, nacha shreyonu pashyami, nacha shreyonu pashyami, hatva swajana mahave. Hatva swajana mahave nimittani cha pashyami viparitani keshava nacha shreyonu pashyami hatva swajana mahave nakankshe vijayam krishna nakankshe vijayam krishna nacha rajyam sukani cha nacha rajyam sukani cha Kimno Rajena Govinda, Kimno Rajena Govinda, Kimbo Gaiji Vitenava, Kimbo Gaiji Vitenava, Nakankshe Vijayam Krishna, Nacharajam Sukanicham, Kimno Rajena Govinda, Kimbo Gaiji Vitenava, Esha marte kankshitam no, Esha marte kankshitam no, Rajyam boga sukani cha, Rajyam boga sukani cha, Taime vastita yudde, Taime vastita yudde, Pranan stektva dhanani cha, Pranan stektva dhanani cha, Esha marte kankshitam no Rajyam bhoga sukani cha Taime vastita yudde Pranan stektva dhanani cha Acharya pitara putraha Acharya pitara putraha Tataiva cha pitamahaha Tataiva cha pitamahaha Matula swashura pautraha, Matula swashura pautraha, Shala sambhandi nastata, Shala sambhandi nastata, Acharya pitara putraha, Tataiva cha pita mahaha, Matula swashura pautraha, Shala sambhandi nastata, etana hantum icchami natopi madusudana api trailokya rajyasya heto kimnu mahikrite heto kimnu mahikrite etana hantum icchami Natopi madusudana api trailokya rajyasya heto kimnu mahikrite.
All of you heard up to verse 30? No, not from the. Okay. Anyone who's heard it fully? Till verse 30. Even if you've not attended the class. We've been recording, no? So have you heard till 30? So, okay. So would you like to summarize just the gist of it?
I think what I got from it is that it starts off with rage and everything, thinking that I'm here to find my way, and then he sees attachments in front of me, and he sees near and near myself, and he weakens. Not because he's weak physically, but because he's not mentally prepared to take on, even though he knows this is the right, it's a battle of Dharma, not a battle of him winning over Duryodhana, but he weakens because he sees the attachment on the other side more. And Duryodhana, on the other hand, is being very brave on the outer side, but you can see that he's scared and he has fear in him because of the way he speaks. There's a lot of ego, there's a lot of fear.
Oh, that's a good thing. What you did a good job. See, the beginning, the verse starts with Dhritarashtra speaking. Dhritarashtra is asking Sanjaya to report to him as to what is happening on the battlefield. Sanjaya was given this power to see miles away by sage Vyasa. So Dhritarashtra is asking him to report what is happening between his sons and Pandu's sons on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Then Sanjaya says Duryodhana went up and spoke to Drona. That's when you see he's trying to betray his fear and everything. In the sense, he's trying to put up a very brave front when he speaks, but deep inside there is ego and fear. Because any person whose motive is selfish, there will be fear, insecurity coming along with it. We did say while we did this verses in the beginning that no selfish person can be happy. No unselfish person will be unhappy. That's a law. Nobody can change it. So Duryodhana, being extremely selfish, scheming and planning, destructive in nature, automatically there is insecurity in him. So in verse number 11 he says, our army which is protected by Bhishma is sufficient. The sense, it's more in number. But that word, it's very interesting. It's not sufficient, it's unlimited. It's more in number. But it also means insufficient. Paryaptam, aparyaptam. Paryaptam means enough. But he is saying, our army is protected by Bhishma. It's unlimited. At the same time, another meaning of that word becomes insufficient. Whereas their army, which is protected by Bhima, is limited. The other meaning becomes sufficient. In the sense, even though he has more in quantity, he still feels insecure. So when the quality is lacking, deep inside, when he is selfish and destructive in nature, he obviously finds himself being insecure. Listening to this, Bhishma, to cheer him and the rest, blows the conch, and rest of them starts blowing their conches. Then from Pandava side, Krishna gives the reply by blowing his conch, wherein we said Krishna is accepting the war, is not enforcing the war. The Pandava side never wanted to go for war, they wanted to settle it amicably. But since there was no other option, all the options were tried, couldn't come to any solution. Therefore, war was the only option. So we quoted Shakespeare there and we said, beware of entrance to a quarrel. Being in, beareth that the enemy beware of thee. You don't start the war or argument. But if you are dragged in a context, make sure that the opponent runs away from you. So, this is exactly what Krishna does there. After trying Sam, Dhan, Bhed, finally Dhand is the only solution. So they went to the war, he accepted it, and Arjuna follows blowing his conch. Everybody is ready. It all shows that they are all ready to begin the war. At that time, Arjuna raising his bow, one hand he is raising his bow, saying that he is not fully ready. He wants to inspect the armies. He tells his charioteer Krishna, take the chariot, take my chariot. That's a very important word there. Take my chariot and place it in between both the armies. I would like to see who all have come to fight. Instead of having an objective view, he has a subjective view. His ego gets involved there. He wants to naturally analyze who all have come to fight. Some analysis, SWOT analysis. Then Krishna takes the chariot and strategically places right in front of Bhishma and Drona. Initially, Arjuna sees Duryodhana and everybody, but the moment he sees Bhishma Drona, from Shatru Bhav, his mind turns into Mitru Bhav. Shatru Bhav means enemy. He sees enemy in the beginning. Then suddenly he starts seeing friends and relatives. The interesting scenario in which he is caught up there is, usually when you go to a war, the people who are opposing you are someone who are not part of your relatives or friends. They are enemies. Here, the people who are opposing him are actually part of his own family, kith and kin. Therefore, he is confused. He is not, as I said, he is not objective there. He is there presenting himself subjectively, hence his attachments and everything clouds his intellect. He cannot think. He is overpowered by his emotions, and because of which physically gets incapacitated. And in verse number 30, the last verse we saw, he says, my Gandiva, the famous bow of Arjuna, he says, my Gandiva is slipping. He is sweating profusely. His skin is burning, he says. A sign of all these are signs of stress. A person who is completely stressed. A person of Arjuna's caliber. When we say Arjuna's caliber, we mean one who is intelligent. He was intelligent in the field of archery, warfare. He also had tremendous experience in the field. He did not lack experience. He was called as Dhananjaya. Right? Winner of wealth. He fought many battles and brought wealth to his country. So he has already had experience. He is also intelligent and skillful in his field. Yet, in his own field, he got stressed. So similarly, in today's life also, all that we are doing with our children is, we are preparing them to develop some skill and intelligence in the world, and giving them some experience. That alone is not enough. Like some situation confronted Arjuna and he became stressed. Some situation can confront any one of us today. And we, in spite of our intelligence, skill and experience, still can become stressed. And when we are stressed, we put ourselves and others into danger. A confused person is not only a danger to himself, he is a danger to everybody else. It is important that we retain our sanity at all times. Isn't it? So therefore, there is something more than intelligence and skill and experience. That is the inner preparation, which is what the entire Gita is. Once you are prepared from inside, then your intelligence, skill and experience, coupling with your inner preparation, you will be able to face any situation in life. Otherwise, you never know when you will be toppled. That's exactly what happens to Arjuna. So now that he is stressed, he starts talking as if he is talking logically, but there is no logic in what he speaks. So we'll chant verse number 31. Nimittani cha pashyami, nimittani cha pashyami, viparitani keshava, viparitani keshava, nacha shreyonu pashyami, nacha shreyonu pashyami, hatva swajana mahave,
హత్వా స్వజన మాహవే నిమిత్తాని చ పశ్యామి విపరీతాని కేశవ నచ శ్రేయోను పశ్యామి హత్వా స్వజన మాహవే.
ఐ సీ అడ్వర్స్ ఓమెన్స్ ఓ కేశవ ఓ కృష్ణ. I do not foresee any good in killing one's own kinsman in battle. Till now, Arjuna did not see any adverse omens. Suddenly, he starts seeing some adverse omens. He is saying, in other words, this is not the auspicious time to fight. Odds are not in our favor. You understand? Till now, he never thought that way. Suddenly he is saying, this is not the right time. Now what do we understand from this? A disturbed mind sees all sorts of things which is not there. And he comes up with some lame excuses. Having seen his own guru, great-grandfather, to whom he is terribly attached, he has already decided he should not fight. It's not good to kill them. Having decided it's not right to fight, he wants to come up with some reason. Instead of saying that I am attached to them, therefore I cannot fight, he comes up with some so-called reasons to get out of the war. That's exactly what he's doing here. I see adverse omens, O Keshava, O killer of demon Kesani. I do not foresee any good in killing one's own kinsmen in battle. Firstly, one's own kinsmen don't go to battle. If they do, then they don't become your kinsmen anymore. Let's be very clear about this. If you feel we are family, then you don't go to the court. If you had gone to the court, then we are not family anymore. This should be very clear. Once we are in the court, we are two different parties. There you got to deal with it legally. Right? So, having gone to the battle, it's like you go to the office and retain your personal relationships there. Let's say you are running a family business. Father and son, when they go to the office, they are not father and son there anymore. Whatever is their role, they are supposed to play as per their role. The chairman, managing director, whatever it is. Instead, there also if they become father and son, then they are mixing roles. That's precisely what Arjuna is doing here. Having gone to the battlefield, he still retains this thought that they are my relatives. So, usually what happens? Generally people talk like this. They say, Arjuna is saying in Gita, but he didn't want to fight. He didn't want to kill all these people. He wanted to go away. He was actually trying to practice ahimsa. But it was Krishna who pushed him into himsa. There are some people who talk like this. Some of us do not have answer to it. So we say, no, you can't talk like that about Krishna. There must be something if Krishna did, because he is God. Deep inside you may also be convinced in what he is saying, but you do not want to say that because you think if I say something against God, then paap may come to my life. So I might as well keep my mouth shut. But actually if you see in the coming verses, from this verse onwards, Arjuna's argument is not that he will not kill. He says, how can I kill these people? So Arjuna has not become like a Jain monk who wants to practice ahimsa. in the context, these people I cannot kill. If it was not Bhishma, Drona, if it was not somebody whom he loves so much, he would have killed them. He had fought so many battles, he would have killed many people. He did not feel guilty about it. Now suddenly, in other words, he doesn't want to kill somebody who is today part of mine. See, remember this. The words me and mine go together. Everything that is catering to me directly or indirectly is mine. The moment it stops catering to me, it becomes my enemy. And what is interesting is, my enemy is also my enemy. There is a relationship. In fact, you have a stronger relationship with your enemy than your friends. Because your enemies sit in your mind for more number of hours than your friends. You may forget your friends, but you will never forget your enemy. If you go visiting the town where your enemy lives, you are all the time thinking, even if you go to a shopping mall or something, you pray to God that you don't meet that fellow there. All the time you are thinking of that guy, even though he is your enemy. So, the mind includes here Bhishma and Drona. So he says, it's like cutting my own feet. I do not want to do that. So he is not actually become non-violent. He is talking out of attachment. He is purely talking out of attachment. Therefore Krishna said, you must become objective in the context and do your duty as one should. Krishna was not trying to push him into violence. There was no violence in Krishna's heart. In the external context, something needs to be set right. And if all other options were exhausted, and this is the only options left, then you do that. There it doesn't become violence. So don't get confused. Like some people, that Krishna pushed Arjuna into violence. Krishna never did. So he said, I do not foresee any good in killing one's own kinsman. Which is true. Why would you want to kill your own friends and relatives? But once you have come to the battlefield, like Arjuna says, in battle, then they are not your kinsmen anymore. There you have to quickly come to the context. Once you are in the context, then you must do what is right as per that rule. In Ramayana, Rama sent Mother Sita to forest, banished her to forest as King Ram. After Lakshman leaves Mother Sita in the forest and comes back, he finds Ram in tears in the palace. So Lakshmana asks, what is this going on? You were the one who banished. Now you are sitting and crying. For which he says, one who sent Sita to forest was Raja Ram. One who is sitting and weeping now is Sita Ram. The role. When I am seated on the throne, I have to rise beyond my personal relationships. If I cannot rise beyond my personal relationships, then I have no moral rights, ethics to sit on the throne. That is why when you take up some position, whether you become a minister or chief minister or prime minister, whatever, you take oath. As a minister, I will not divulge the information that I come to know to anybody. Right? All those kind of oaths you take, that is very important to maintain that integrity to that role. Here Arjuna lacks, is confused. Verse 32.
Nakangshe vijayam Krishna, nakangshe vijayam Krishna, nacharajyam sukhanicha, nacharajyam sukhanicha, kimno rajena govinda, kimno rajena govinda, kim bogai jivitena vam, kim bogai jivitena vam, nakangshe vijayam Krishna, nacharajyam sukhanicha, kimno rajena govinda, kim bogai jivitena vam.
I desire not victory, O Krishna, nor kingdom, nor pleasures. Of what avail is kingdom to us, O Govinda? Of what avail are enjoyments or life? See, when you listen to these sort of words being spoken by Arjuna, one may come to the conclusion that Arjuna has become really dispassionate. He has become like a sant or a monk. He's risen above all these worldly pleasures. Hence he's saying, I desire not victory, I desire not kingdom, I desire not pleasures. What is the use of all these enjoyments? These are all trivial, passing, fleeting. You feel as if you are listening to a Upanishadic master speaking. Is he really in that state of mind? He's not. Firstly, nobody asked him, are you really interested in victory, kingdom, enjoyments, pleasures, etc. Unprovoked, he's saying this. Number two, if he was not interested in victory, kingdom, pleasures, enjoyment and all these things, why is he now in the battlefield? He could have continued staying in the forest. He could have said, yeah, this is the best thing. I feel this life is very good. You guys go back. I am not interested. He was very much interested. In fact, he was practicing every day there. Otherwise, you know, if you don't practice, your skills will vanish. However talented you might be. In between, when Tendulkar had taken 6 months off to, get his shoulders right, there was some shoulder injury. 6 months he did not play cricket continuously. After that he had to go and practice rigorously, even though he is so talented player. So Arjuna was practicing every day in the forest. That means what? He is a rajasic person, he is very much interested in the kingdom. Well, we can say that he is not interested in somebody else's property, but he definitely is interested in his property, and there is nothing wrong in it. But in the context now, he is talking as if he is risen above all these things. Before anybody asks somebody how much he is interested in money, wealth, etc., if he himself says, I am not interested in money, be rest assured he is very much interested in money. And not only that, there is something that is bothering him deep inside. Therefore, on the outside he is saying, I am not interested. This is what we call in Sanskrit as rajasic renunciation, rajasic tyaga. There are three types of renunciations: sattvic, the right renunciation; rajasic, the false renunciation; tamasic renunciation, which is a perverted renunciation. When you do not know the value of an object and give it away, it is called as tamasic renunciation. Let us say there is some treasure in a box which your ancestors had kept, been living in your house which is quite old. One day you were dusting everything and you see so much of dust and it's old box, you didn't even open it. You just gave it away to somebody. Someone else sees it, they open it and see there's so much treasure inside. Oh, what a great renegade this person is. He or she would not have given it if they had known that there was so much treasure inside. That is tamasic renunciation. When you do not understand the value of the object that you are gifting away, it is tamasic renunciation. Due to ignorance, you are gifting it away. Rajasic renunciation is, you know the value. You are very much interested in it. But to attain that object or to retain that object, there is some effort required from your side. And that difficulty you do not want to go through. Therefore you say, I am not interested in that. That is false vairagya, false tyaga, false renunciation. If I want the most expensive car, I need to work for it. That difficulty I do not want to go through. Therefore I say, what is in a car? When there is some obstacle and you find it difficult to cross that obstacle, and because of which you claim to be giving away the fruit, there is rajasic vairagya. This is exactly what Arjuna is doing here. Sattvic vairagya or sattvic tyaga, what is that? You know the value. You go through the difficulty in attaining it or retaining it. But mentally, that object doesn't sit in your mind. Whatever doesn't preoccupy your mind with reference to that, you are a person of renunciation, because that is not preoccupied in your mind. How would you call, or who would you call rich? Who is rich, truly speaking? So what does it mean? Satisfied.
Control.
Anybody else? You, these are not wrong, but see, Swamiji defines richness as one whose desires are less than his assets. If your desires are more than your assets, you are poor. If your desires are less than your assets, you are rich. Immaterial of how much your assets are. If your assets are 5,000 crores and your desires are 6,000 crores, you are 1,000 crores poor.
This is physical.
I am talking with reference to money. Wealth, whatever wealth. So when we say a person has only one crore, but his desires are only 10 lakhs, he is 90 lakhs rich. The same thing, if you put it in a different way, it becomes very clear. In whose mind money is not there, wealth is not there, he is rich. In his pocket, in his bank, everywhere money can be. It may be, may not be. But in his mind, money is not there. If you are thinking about money, which means what? If I had that, I would be happy. So you are not rich. You are that much poor. Money has a practical value. If you had money, that's not a guarantee for you to be happy. If you did not have money, that is also not a guarantee for you to be happy. Money has nothing to do directly or indirectly with happiness. But money has a practical option that brings to you, which is, if you had money, instead of sitting and suffering in Delhi, you can probably go to Switzerland and suffer. So the choice is there. Money brings options. That's about it. It's got nothing to do with happiness. So here when Arjuna says, I desire not victory, kingdom, pleasures, enjoyment, in his mind all this is there. Physically he doesn't want to do anything because there is an obstacle which is to fight against Bhishma, Drona, and also it's not an ordinary war. He is actually supposed to eliminate them in this war. With this obstacle, he cannot face. He thinks he'll be doing pap. As against that pap, he says, this money I am not interested.
He's not sure it's big, right? Because there's that much more
power. He in fact is sure. Deep inside. He knows. He is quite talented. He can finish them off. And especially with Krishna being on his side, he knows he can finish them off.
Krishna knows, even Arjuna.
Yes, of course. That is why Arjuna asked for Krishna. Otherwise Arjuna would have asked for his weapons. The very fact that he was so confident, he said, I just want you. You know that story, na? When both Arjuna and Krishna went, Arjuna and Duryodhana went to Krishna, the option was to choose Krishna without weapons, or the entire weapons of mass destruction which Krishna had with him. All that. Duryodhana was very happy when Arjuna chose Krishna. It is not that Arjuna did not know the power of the weapons, but he knew the power of Krishna and he had self-confidence. All that he wanted was Krishna. So he forget killing Bhishma and Drona. He even considered raising weapons against them as sinful. Even assuming that he thought he will fail. It's like sometimes you feel raising your voice against your parents, elders is not correct. He had such thoughts, you know.
So this was not an excuse for him to fight them. He actually felt that it's like he was using superstitions and other things as excuses to not face them in battle.
Yes, he was using.
This was not an excuse that I have to kill my own family or kill.
He cannot kill them. In the sense, at the moment he has become emotional. It's not that he... See, what is the block? The block is at the mental level, not at the physical level. Physical level he has the capacity to fight them. But the mind is preventing him. He doesn't feel he's not capable. His problem is, how is it right, first of all? So he feels that it's not right to fight with them. In fact, he's going to talk about all that. He'll say they are worthy of worship. I'm supposed to be worshipping them. How can I fight with them? He'll speak all that. So I'm only trying to point out few points here. That is, first point, it is not as though he has become or he wants to practice non-violence. He is only saying, I can't fight with these people. He would have killed if it was somebody else. So it is not that he has become non-violent person, number one. Number two, here in this verse, it is not as though he has attained that sense of vairagya at that height. No. There is an obstacle, difficulty. He himself will say later on. He will say, for whose sake we desire kingdom, they are staying there. Which means what? One statement. In fact, I think it's the next verse itself. Yeah. The very next verse. So we'll chant that.
Yesha marte kaṅkṣitam no. Yesha marte kaṅkṣitam no. Rajyam bhoga sukani cha. Rajyam bhoga sukani cha. Ta ime vastita yuddhe. Ta ime vastita yuddhe. Pranānstyaktvādhanānicha. Esha marte kaṅkṣitam no. Rajyam bhoga sukani cha. Ta ime vastita yuddhe. Pranānstyaktvādhanānicha. Acharya pitara putraha. Tataiva cha pitamahaha. Tataiva cha pitamahaha. Matula swashura pautraha. Shala sambhandinastata. Acharya pitara putraha. Tataiva cha pitamahaha. Matula swashura pautraha. Shala sambhandinastata.
Those for whose sake we desire kingdom. What was that he said in the previous verse? Read the previous verse. I desire not victory. I desire not kingdom. I desire not pleasures. These are the words of Arjuna in the previous verse. Now what is he saying? For whose sake we desire kingdom. Which means what? He is desiring kingdom, but he is saying here, for those whose sake we desire kingdom, enjoyments, pleasures, they stand here in battle, having renounced their lives and riches. Bhishma renounced the throne. That is how it came to Dhritarashtra. You know the story, right? So he is talking about that. They have renounced everything and they are staying there. And we would love to win this battle, if at all, to share it with them. But then, if I have to win this battle, I will have to kill them. So basically saying, on one hand he says, I am not interested. On the other hand, of course I am interested, but interested to get it and share it with them. Teachers, fathers, sons and also grandfathers, maternal uncles, fathers-in-law, grandsons, brothers-in-law and kinsmen. All these, some of them are in plural because each one of them were married many times. So, the statements here clearly expose Arjuna's mind. See, when you go to a place where everybody is sleeping, everybody looks pious because all of them are sleeping. You cannot make out who is a thief, who is a soldier, who is what. The moment he wakes up, what happens? Thief goes and steals, soldier goes and does his work. So once you are awake, he gets exposed. Lot of us, when we remain silent, people can mistake us for Buddha. Oh, what a great soul. Very quiet. The moment that person starts speaking, then his or her knowledge gets exposed. Acha, only this much he knows. Only this much she knows. Till he or she had not spoken, you can say, oh, he knows everything. The moment you ask some question and he answers, then you know that level. isn't it? Here also, the fact that Arjuna is speaking, from his words we can clearly know what his mind, state of mind is. So that is why I am saying, his state of mind here is not true Vairagya state. It's a false Vairagya. In Sanskrit we call it a Smashana Vairagya. When somebody who is near and dear, say for example, father himself has died and two sons. One fellow says, father himself has died, what is the use in me getting his property? For me, father was more valuable. So he says, I don't want. He writes, there's a sign he does. He says, I give up all my rights. Then it goes to the other brother, he's enjoying. Suddenly after 5 years or 10 years, this fellow files a case in the court. Is that time something happened to me, so I signed. But I want it back. What does it mean? Smashana Vairagya. Smashan, you know, no? The burial ground, cremation ground. When something happens of that sort of a tragedy, at that time you feel, really genuinely feel, what is the use of all this? Later on, when the heat of passion rises in you, then slowly you feel. You know, this is very interesting. At times of death of some near and dear one, you don't feel like eating, you don't feel like watching movies and everything. But after a few days, slowly the passion, the heat, the desire slowly comes out. When it slowly comes out, the very same person who was not interested in these things, very much interested. This is his real state. That is the situation, because of that, he or she behaved like that. That's exactly what is happening to Arjuna. Anything that is conditional is not your state. It is the situation that has brought that condition. What Krishna or Bhagavad Gita or Vedanta is trying to tell us is, your love should be unconditional. If your love was in a certain condition, then it is not love. If your dhan was in a certain condition, then it's not a true dhan. Are you with me? How is it possible that you will be giving for 1 hour in a day and 23 hours in a day you'll be taking? You go and work in the office with so much of greed and try to ethically, unethically, morally, immorally, try to annex as much as possible to your work, to your properties, to your assets. And then 2 hours you go and then apparently do some dhan. Is that truly a person's growth? Is it speaking of truly person's growth? No. Definitely not. To whatever extent you have become charitable, that will be there 24 hours, 365 days. Are you with me? The fragrance that the rose gives, it's not conditional. Whether there are people coming, visiting the rose garden, or nobody coming, still rose continues to give fragrance. Somebody has come in front of me, therefore I behave very nicely. That means I'm inherently not a nice person. If I was inherently a nice person, then I will continue to be like that. In schools, you know, between two periods there is some gap, no? 5 minutes maybe. Before the other teacher walks in, this teacher has left. The other teacher has not yet walked in. Children will make so much of noise. And suddenly when the teacher walks in, pin drop silence. It's a conditional behavior. The real behavior of children is when the teacher is not there. If the policeman is there, the radar is there, how do you drive? If the policeman or the radar is not there, how do you drive? That's your true nature. That shows how much you respect the law, truly. If you are a person who is a law-abiding person, who respects the law, whether the police is there, not there, you would still follow the law. Are you with me? So here also, in Arjuna's case, it is conditional. The so-called non-violence that he is talking about is conditional. So Krishna's point is, the worst thing in life is self-deceit. The worst thing to do is to deceive yourself. Today, I am interested in money, if somebody is clear. Of course, I would rightly work for it and earn it. I do not want to beg, borrow and steal that. But I will work for it. That's my level. I cannot say what is there in money and then go and sit in an ashram or mentally thinking of it. There are two sannyasis went from the ashram to the market to buy their routine vegetables for the ashram. One was an elderly sannyasi, another one was a young sannyasi. After they purchased whatever they had to purchase and they were returning back to the ashram, they had to come along a pond, you know, alongside of a pond. And they saw one young lady carrying water in a pot and struggling to carry and walk. The young fellow went and offered to help her. He carried her and the pot and walked and dropped her in her house. All along, this elderly sannyasi was so agitated. So after that he said, how dare, we are sannyasis, how dare you carry the young woman? You are not supposed to do that. How can you touch a lady? I am going to report this to the guru. So he said, young man said, I don't deny the fact that I carried her, but I dropped her long time ago. You are still carrying her in your head. That is sannyas. You want to understand sannyas. If truly you had risen above that, then you can decide what sort of lifestyle you want to lead. Then you can probably lead, if you want to, a sannyasi lifestyle. Otherwise, you must be true to your nature. That's the most important thing in life. By getting away from your object of desire, you don't rise above it. By going through it and gaining the knowledge side by side, over a period of time, you may rise above it. That is why, if you see, we have in our dharma, brahmacharya ashrama, then grahastha ashrama, vanaprastha ashrama and sannyasa ashrama. You go through, you just study the scriptures. Just because you got some information in the brahmacharya ashrama doesn't mean that you are able to rise above your desires. Therefore, the next stage is given, which is grahastha ashrama. You rightfully go through your desires, following the ethics and morality. Alongside, you continue your sadhana, gaining the knowledge, tapas, etc. Then what happens is, slowly, the knowledge and experience together will make you rise above those desires. You become more refined. Then even though you are very much amongst the world, worldly objects, still your mind is going towards Atman, Brahman, God, etc. That is the Vanaprastha stage. That is the stage you can decide whether you want to continue being in grahastha ashrama and do your tapasya, or you want to take up sannyas. That's up to you individually. You may take up, you may need not take up. But in spirit you are already a sannyas. agree with me? So, if you see in Gita, to me it seems Krishna, if he was against something, he is against hypocrisy. He says, Arjuna, you are interested in these things. And this is an opportunity for you, as a Kshatriya, to fight and protect righteousness. Instead of just being honest to yourself, you are trying to hide behind this nonsensical logic and talking as if you are a sannyasi. That is basically the gist of it. So he says, for those for whose sake we desire kingdom, enjoyments and pleasures, they stand here in battle. If Bhishma and Drona said, okay, we are not fighting, we are going away, and only Duryodhana, Dushasana and all these people are there, Arjuna would have fought the battle without any problem. But he had attachment for them. So it's basically, he didn't want to kill his own people. Not that he was practicing non-violence. And then he says, teachers, fathers, sons, grandfathers, uncles, fathers-in-laws, grandsons, brothers-in-law and kinsmen. All these people are my relatives. So if it was not his relatives, by this time would have killed him. He is so capable, he would have finished them off in one go. So this is how the mind functions. You know, when some people talk to us, sometimes, you know, they want to share something, discuss something with us. It's very interesting. A person approached me and said, there is something bothering him. Therefore, he thought he's going to die. You know, and he went into the internet and you can search headache. Supposing you put headache and what are the causes for headache, something it will say even some serious cause, you know. So like that he went into the internet on his own. He decided rather than going and surrendering to a doctor, he thought he himself will see what it is. Then it said something, so he thought he's going to die. So suddenly he said, I'm not interested in this and that. So later on, fortunately he spoke to me, then I had to tell him, you know, you firstly go to a doctor, find out whether something is wrong or not. He did all that. Believe me, what he said he wants to give up, now it's about 10 years. Not 10 years, 12 years. He is actually annexed much more to his wealth. I'm happy about it. What I'm trying to say is, you should be at your level. You will be happy, a crocodile will be happy when it is in water. That is where its strength lies. Somebody who is supposed to be married and living in life as a grihastha should be in that. Somebody who is not supposed to be married and remain single should be like that, not get married. He will also be frustrated, he will frustrate the other person also. Your life should be as per your nature. That's the most important thing. If you are not finding yourself where you belong to, all the other things, however commercial value it may bring into your life, those are like plastic flowers around you. Because from inside you are not happy. This is essentially what we need to understand with reference to life. So, self-deceit. Arjuna is not talking, trying to deceive Krishna. His mind is disturbed, therefore he is talking. While he is talking, he exposes himself. Words expose what is there in your mind. Many times when you speak and clearly know what is in the mind. So in one verse he says, I desire not. Another verse, I desire. Hot and cold he blows. This is a sign of clear disturbance. There will be some consistency. You know, in cricket, when you watch cricket, if an umpire calls a particular ball a wide, when a particular team is playing, when the opponents play the same kind of ball when they bowl, if he calls that also as wide, then they say it's okay. Because some consistency is maintained. But for this team he says it's wide, for that team he says it's not wide, then there is something fishy. Isn't it? So there must be some consistency. It's not there in Arjuna's words. In other words, deep inside he is very much interested. In fact, when you forcefully try to give up, that is when the object that you are forcefully trying to give up sits in your mind much more. Isn't it? During upavas time, you think of food more. Isn't it? It's like Ramtita says, anything forced is never forceful. Anything forced is never forceful. Swami Ramatita. When there is a flow of water, you build a dam across. What happens? Because of that resistance, what happens? The pressure, the water, the power, you can produce electricity there. There is so much of, what do you call, strength it tries to gather to break that and come out. It's always the case with the mind as well. When we try to forcefully give up something, it never happens then. It gets stuck in your mind. That is why Vedanta says there should be no do's and don'ts in your life. The moment there should be no do's and don'ts doesn't mean you become unscrupulous. The moment you say don't, mind negates the don't and gets stuck with that object. Have you ever seen child, you know, to tell a child, you know, in South India they say, you're not supposed to go and stand on the threshold. Children will go and stand there. Or in front of you they will not. When you turn this side, they'll go and stand there and say, they'll do like this. That's how the mind behaves. The moment you say don't, you know, a lot of people take this resolution, New Year resolution. Till 12 o'clock in the night, they're drinking and drinking, because from next day onwards, they're going to give up. And then later on, first year anniversary of giving up of alcohol is being celebrated. Which means, it is not given up fully, it's still in the mind. They'll take up one day in full swing. It doesn't last long. When you forcefully try to give up things, it will get stuck. Anything forced is never forceful. What you resist will persist. That's how it works. So Arjuna doesn't understand this. He's talking as if he's a great renunciate, but his rajasic vairagya, false vairagya, is clearly exposed. Verse number 35. Etanahantumichami, inatopi madusudhana, నతోపి మధుసూదన అపి త్రైలోక్య రాజ్యస్య అపి త్రైలోక్య రాజ్యస్య హేతో కిం ను మహీకృతే హేతో కిం ను మహీకృతే ఏతానహంతుమిచ్ఛామి నతోపి మధుసూదన అపి త్రైలోక్య రాజ్యస్య హేతో కిం ను మహీకృతే దీస్ ఐ డు నాట్ విష్ టు కిల్ He doesn't say, I do not wish to kill anybody. He says, these I do not wish to kill. Though killed by them. O Madhusudana, O killer of demon Madhu. Madhu means honey. When somebody talks sweetly to you, they are catering to your ego. The real demon in any one of us is the ego. So Madhusudana, killer of demon called Madhu, Krishna, the demon which is in us is ego. Arjuna here is addressing Krishna as Madhusudana. You killed a demon called Madhu. But these are all great people, how can I kill them? They are not demons. Even for the sovereignty of the three worlds, how then for the earth? His mind is not only thinking of earth, his mind is even thinking of sovereignty of three worlds. Please understand, when you start a business, supposing you start doing business at the state level, over a period of time, you should have your business going up to the country level, then international level. There has to be growth. Well, nothing wrong as a king wanting to be king of all the three worlds. But inside he has that much of rajas. But outside he is trying to be sattvic. This is the problem in many of our cases. So therefore you need to find out what exactly is your nature. See, if anybody comes now in this Gita class and look at our faces and say, oh my God, all these are great people sitting here, Vishwamitra, you know, all these are great souls. It is not as though we have only desire for studying Vedanta. We have other desires also. Here in this class, whatever little sattva is there, that is manifesting. But other times, we also have rajas, we also have tamas. So you need to find out your level and function according to that. Only then you can maintain the serenity. You have to, see, in other words, a child should play with toys. Then the child will slowly rise above the toys. If the child doesn't play with toys and start studying Shakespeare at that age, it's very dangerous. That is why when children have pity fights and all those things, it is all the process of growth. It will make them grow, you know, slowly out of it. But if you try to give them a very protected environment, that nature is being stifled, that comes out later on. After having become an adult, the body is adult, the mind is not risen above. So, he says, these I do not wish to kill, though killed by them. Even for the sovereignty of the three worlds, how for just this earth? In other words, he is saying, whatever may be offered to me to kill these people, even if it is the highest, I'm not ready. So he has clearly exposed his mind, how deeply he is attached to these people. It is not very difficult for Krishna to understand the situation. Yet he maintains silence, because Arjuna has not become a listener yet. When there is no listener, to whom will you speak? So he allows him to continue. And by allowing that person to continue, you will be able to judge, assess what exactly is wrong with him. You go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist. They will also allow you to speak, and you go for counseling. In fact, you will be speaking more. They listen to you. From your words, from your behavior, they try to see what is happening in your mind. So a kind of psychotherapy is happening here. You understand? Krishna is merely listening. Arjuna is speaking. From that, Krishna assesses Arjuna's mind. And later on, when Arjuna surrenders, Krishna gives his solution. We'll conclude the class. Om. Om. Purnamada Purnamidham Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.